Hello, everybody. We're going to go ahead and kick off the lunch speaking portion. The food will be here soon. Just to introduce myself, I'm Brianna Lilliman. I'm the second vice president of the Illinois Association of Blind Students. I'm kind of emceeing for the lunch today. And to start everything out, we are going to have our wonderful president, Ms. Rose Sloan, give us a brief introduction about IUBS and what we've been up to. So, Rose.
Hello, everyone. All right, so Bree told me that I'm supposed to tell you what IUBS is all about. So, to begin with, we are the Illinois Association of Blind Students. And if the name doesn't imply it, we are a group of students, a group of mostly blind students, but not everyone's blind. Anyone who's interested in blindness issues, who is a student, is encouraged to join. And we're interested in improving the education for blind students. IABS is a part of two big organizations. So first, we are a division within the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois. And we are also an affiliate of the National Association of Blind Students. And the greatest thing about IABS is that we are a community in which we all have similar goals, we all have some similar experiences, and so we can talk to one another about these experiences and especially about any problems or issues that we may have in school. And it's just, you know, a unique group because, you know, I can sit here and talk to my friend Laura about, oh, you know, the disability services, they didn't get my stuff made enlarged for me in time. But she's not really going to totally understand how frustrating that is. Whereas, you know, my IABS family, they get it right away. You know, they're like, yeah, I've been there, I get that. So it's a great way to network and bounce ideas off of each other. So, yeah, you know, if I'm not convinced you yet on how great IABS is, stick around for this lunch. We have a fantastic agenda set up for you guys in which we're going to talk about some of the programs that IABS participates in, including the STEMX program. You guys will hear about that. You guys will also hear about the internship program, which the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois puts on. And then, of course, you guys will have the opportunity to meet the scholarship winners at the state level. So all of these programs are just great outlets for IABS members. When we're not gathered in convention, we have monthly calls. And of course, anyone who's interested in student issues, whether you're an IABS member or not, I encourage you all to become IABS members. But you can call into those. And we will be announcing the first IABS meeting of this new term tomorrow morning at our student breakfast, which of course, this is a kind of running theme here. I'm going to encourage you to come to that as well. So this year, IABS, you know, we did so many things, and at the student breakfast that I mentioned, I'll sort of give a presidential report in which I go over everything we actually did. I'm not going to take the time to do that now, but I will highlight that this year we really got involved in some legislative stuff. We sent three of the IABS board members to Washington Seminar. We made sure we wrote letters to our members of Congress and encouraged them to sign on to NFB initiatives. But really, IABS is about what the members want it to be about. So sure, I'm a government affairs specialist. I like legislative stuff. That was on my agenda, and I was really excited that IABS went along with it this year. But whenever anyone comes up to me and they're like, hey, we should talk about this, then that usually gets on the agenda. So for example, Bree here, she's like, you know, I think it would be really cool if we could politely remind IABS members how important it is to be a good self-advocate. So you guys will have the treat of seeing a panel of recent graduates and current students talk about their college experience and the important steps they've taken to be successful students. So Bree came up to me with this idea. We talked about it amongst the board and amongst ourselves, and we came up with a solution to make it happen. So, yep, IABS is what you make of it. And that's pretty much it. I mean, if you have any ideas of what IABS should do this year, come, you know, find me, come find Bree, find anyone on the IABS board, and we'd be happy to make it happen. Now, I hope everyone enjoys your lunch. Thanks.
Thank you, Rose. And just to add to that, if you would like to become a member of IABS, we are collecting dues today. So come to our back table after this lunch, and we can take your $5 dues, and you can be an IABS member. So thank you, Rose. Now we're going to introduce to you all our scholarship class for this year. Debbie Stein is a board member on IABS, and she's also in charge of the scholarship program. So I would like to ask Debbie to come up and introduce that program, and then we'll get to hear from the students. So, Debbie.
Okay, as Bree explained, I chair the National Federation of the Blind of Illinois Scholarship and Internship Committee. The scholarship program is a very long-standing program in the state of Illinois, and actually it goes back to the 1980s, and I took over as chair of this committee in about 1991, I think. So it has a sort of rhythm to it that goes through the year, which I have, you know, become very accustomed to over all this long time. And as I'm talking, if the scholarship winners would come up so that I can introduce you individually, and that is Adrian Falconer and Alex Takewell, and Nicole Yarmolkovich. Am I pronouncing your name right? Is that close enough? Okay, I think I've been missaying it for a while, so please correct me. Our scholarship applications are due March 31st, and that's for the state of Illinois and our national scholarship program. Some of the people who have won our state scholarships have gone on in subsequent years to win National Federation of the Blind scholarships, where they're competing with students all over the country and Puerto Rico. Here in Illinois, our program consists of students who either reside in or study in Illinois. So if they're out-of-state students who are going to a school here, they qualify, or if they're Illinois students studying in or out of Illinois, they qualify to apply. And we look for academic excellence, we look for leadership potential, we look for students who are well-rounded, who have a life inside and outside of school. And I'm going to now turn the mic over to our students and let them introduce themselves a little bit. And the first one, going alphabetically, is Adrian Falconer.
Adrian, are you here? Oh, come on. Up here. Yeah, and then around the table, and there's a mic here. Got it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty tall.
Yeah, can you see it? Yeah, you got it.
Okay. Hello?
Gotta kind of talk close to it.
Hello?
There you go.
Okay. My name is Adrian Falconer. I am currently...
Closer to the mic.
Oh. My name is Adrian Falconer. I'm currently getting my master's in social work at Governor State University. I wasn't born with a vision impairment, and I was very... I knew I wanted to become a social worker, but after losing my vision, I didn't want to be labeled, I guess, as blind, and I was very hesitant to receive any help, you know, as far as just any additional help and training, and, you know, going back to school was definitely out of the question. But a guest speaker came to one of the rehab services that I was attending, and it really encouraged me to go back to school. And there was life after becoming blind, so I started back enrolling into school and getting help financially with school. And right now I'm currently getting my master's degree. It's not easy, but nothing in life is easy, and I'm enjoying it. I'm learning new things. I'm meeting new people, and I'm very fortunate to be here today, and I'm absorbing everything, and I hope to become more involved and just branch out into the world, becoming more independent and helping others with my vision impairment as well.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So happy to have you. Okay, next is Alex Takewell, who you will also hear from a little bit later about STEMX. Alex?
Hi, I'm Alex Takewell. I am...
Get a little closer to the mic.
A little closer, like here?
You can raise that too.
Oh, okay. I am a freshman at Loyola Chicago, and I'm currently double majoring biology and psychology. So I'm not sure what I want to do right now, but I was really interested maybe going into the psychology field, maybe become a psychologist. I heard about the National Federation of the Blind about a year ago. So my vision teacher told me about it, and then she worked with Rose also. So I was able to figure out, I learned more about the association from her, and also I talked to Debbie also when I applied for the state scholarship, and I was really glad that I was able to come here. And I also did the program over the summer with other students in the STEMX program, which was like science stuff. I was really glad I got to meet a lot of new people, and I really haven't met like a lot of other visually impaired people or blind. So I thought it was a great experience getting to know others and see how they advocate for themselves, and I could learn how to advocate more for myself as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And finally, Nicole Yarmolkovich.
Nicole? Yep. Yeah, this is actually perfect, if everyone can hear me. So my name's Nicole. I am a junior at Elmhurst College. My major is psychology, and I have a minor in communication studies. And I have my guide dog Flash with me today. And I seem to be the only one with a guide dog. If I'm wrong, someone correct me. So I have Leber's congenital amaurosis, so I have about half my vision left, and I have been like this all my life. And it's just because of college, I've been able to realize that I am capable of doing anything I want. And if I really set my mind to it, I have so much determination that I will not quit at all, because I feel like it's important that I accomplish my goals and go to try to accomplishing my dreams. And because of my determination, I'm involved in a lot of service activities at school, and a lot of just, I help a lot of people, which is what I initially want to do, because when I graduate from Elmhurst, I want to go on to graduate school and get my master's degree in child clinical counseling, and I want to give back to the people who have helped me in the past few years to get through everything I needed to get through. And I want to help children and to have them realize at an early age that they can do whatever they want, even if they don't have a disability or they do. I just want them to know that there are people in the world who care about them and they can do whatever they set their minds to. And that's my life goal, is just to help people. And I also wanted to say thank you for the scholarship, because you're helping me, and through me, you're helping many other children who need services from counseling or therapy. Thanks.
So you can see these are all impressive young people, and we're so thrilled to be able to give them a little extra help financially and also by bringing them the message of the Federation that it's okay to be blind, that you can pursue your goals, that you can be what you want to be, and that you have a contribution to make, and that your contributions are welcome and needed. As I said, our scholarship applications are due on March 31st. We also have the National Scholarship Program, and the chair of the National Scholarship Committee is our own Patty Gregory Chang. She may want to mention a little bit more about that as convention goes on. So I'm going to turn it back over to Bree and find out what's next.
Thank you, Debbie, and thank you to our scholarship winners. Next, we're going to talk about STEMX. Alex brought it up. He's actually going to be the first person to speak about it. He was a participant, and we also have a mentor here to talk. So I'm going to let Alex go first.
Hello, this is Alex again. So the STEMX program was, I believe, about a week-long program in it was held in Towson University in Towson, Maryland. And my mentor happens to be Chris Meyer, or he was. So I had a pleasure working with him, and also worked with Justin Salisbury. Yeah. So I chose the chemistry track, but the STEM program branches into like any mathematics, engineering, science, technology stuff. So they had different subsections, I guess. So they covered chemistry, civil engineering, aerospace engineering, and I think computer-aided design stuff. So I thought it was a great experience getting to work with other primarily high school students. And once again, it was good to meet other people who were similar to me. And I thought it was a great way. We work with like many professors who are specialists in their fields, and we are currently in the STEM fields. So it was great working with someone who has experience and is in a similar situation, so you know that there are opportunities and jobs available for us, and that there's nothing that can hold us back and stuff. So, yeah.
Next, we're going to hear from Chris Meyer, who was a mentor in the program.
It's fine. I'll get it. Can I take it off? I say STEM, you say expel. STEM. STEM. I say STEM, you say excel. STEM. STEM. All right, guys, thank you. That was our rowdy chant from the week of STEMX in Baltimore, Maryland. Hello. So yeah, that was the rowdy chant from our week of STEMX in Baltimore, Maryland this summer. STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. The X is to the extreme. I think it was also a play on the fact that it was our 10th annual camp like this for high school students primarily. And I got to tell you, it was a really great experience. But yeah, think of that chant that we just kind of feebly tried to do. I really appreciate picking up on it. But think of that from 50 somewhat rowdy high school students, and then add to that the encouragement and, you know, finagling of us adult mentors and the Federation staff that were there at Towson University. And finally, if you've ever met Anil Lewis, add the riling up that he provides, and you can realize it was a pretty big, we made a cacophony out of that. So this wasn't really the only noise that the STEMX student made in Baltimore this summer, though. In fact, we actually, to an extent, we saved the United States from a deadly comet. But before I go to that, I'll tell you a little bit more. So some people might ask, what exactly is STEMX? As the name implies, science. It was a, as I said, it was a camp organized by the National Federation of the Blind to focus on the broad subjects of science, mathematics, and applied fields. There were more than 50 blind and low vision students that attended from across the country, representing a wide range of interests and backgrounds. These were, by all respects, very bright and capable students who wanted to pursue a week of learning and, of course, fun. Okay, so now back to that comet. I'm not sure if you guys know much about it, but we had this whole scenario that we built up that there was a comet approaching the eastern seaboard of the United States. It was going to land in the Atlantic and cause all sorts of havoc. So it was hurtling towards planet Earth, or so the story goes, and the STEMX team just had 1 week to rescue the entire east coast of the United States. The students had been conveniently split into five teams. These were chemistry, robotics, computing, aerospace, and civil engineering. All right, so it was time to get to work. Each took up the call to action. The chemists distilled ethanol into biofuel. The computer technologists mapped social media trends to aid the president in evacuation efforts. In civil engineering, a pedestrian land bridge was fabricated. In aerospace, a human-guided spacecraft was built. And finally, the robotics team designed a mocked-down modular comet rover to explore the approaching threat. So together, these and other projects were able to save millions of lives. And though this was, of course, just a scenario, no lives were at risk, it was a good way to get a few laughs and together, a good way to bring the teams together what blind students were able to achieve. Besides a scientific excuse to get on Twitter and follow Twitter trends, and also a scientific excuse to learn how to distill sugar into ethanol or alcohol, which, by the way, one of my students from deep south Louisiana had some prior knowledge of, which he wasn't afraid to share. The high school students, immersed in a constructive atmosphere of successful blind adults and mentors. These mentors and instructors ranged from former Army Corps of Engineer experts, doctoral chemistry students and computer coders, to less experienced business students like myself, rehabilitation instructors, and more. So whether we were science experts or not, we were there to contribute. And contribute, I think we did. So we were there to share not just our scientific know-how, for me, I don't have much, but also to share the all-important positive attitudes of blindness. And this is what we did. So as a STEMX mentor, I had many chances to encourage my students. At times, I was too busy chasing them around campus to see it happen, but as I think back, I really do realize some of the small and large changes that I saw happen. So in small ways, I would suggest to one student, hey, why don't you use your cane next time so you don't trip over that curb? Or I would take two students aside to give them special attention working through the cane or with a tray in one hand and a cane in another. A few times, I'd call ahead to one of the other mentors and ask him to give me a hand with my students. Justin and I were actually, Justin Salisbury, who will be speaking later, and I were, we were co-mentors, and he really was a big help in that respect. So I learned not just how to lead, but also how to be a better team player. So STEMX saved us from a metaphoric comet, but it also did much more. I saw new friendships form and attitudes on blindness change. One of my students, who had never carried a cane before, was carrying it patiently throughout the week, and by the end of the week, he/she was even willing to take it on the plane with him/her, and that was without my nagging. So that was a neat experience. That was a neat thing to see. Another student, initially hesitant about his college prospects, explained by the end of the week that he was willing to consider out-of-state options for a chemistry major. And so that was tangible stuff. So in these and other many other ways, I couldn't have been more proud. I think that I was just being myself and teaching what I've been taught as a confident blind person. But in all of these ways, we made a huge impact on the lives of the students, and I think that we learned just as much. So I'm really happy to say I was a part of that program. So thank you. I say STEM, you say expel. STEM. STEM. I say STEM, you say excel. STEM, excel. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. That was great. Another wonderful thing going on within our state affiliate is the internship program. We have two speakers who were interns this summer. Is Ronan Young here currently? He is. Okay. Ronan is going to speak first, and he is actually birthday boy this weekend. So happy birthday, Ronan. We could. Let's sing happy birthday to Ronan. I think that's in order.
He's to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Ronan. Happy birthday to you.
What do you say?
Yeah.
Oh,
great. There are cake and cupcakes in honor of Ronan's birthday. So thank you.
Thank you.
Hello. Hello.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Actually, I can hold it. I can hold it with one hand and keep it the other. Yeah. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is my greatest pleasure to speak to you about my summer internship, or should I say, internships. This past summer, I was a page at the Oak Brook Public Library and Westman Public Library. A product tester at Typhoon Promotions, a business that sells golf supplies, and a data entry operator at AbilityLinks at Marine Joy. hospital. I work 20 hours per week, spread over 4 days for 8 weeks. Other than watering flowers from my neighbor, this was my first real job. My summer internships were fun but also hard work. If I were to do the internship program again, I'd work four different reasons because I thought that was too tiring. Sometimes I was frustrated when my technology did not work. Sometimes I was challenged, like when my wheelchair broke, or when a job requires more vision than I have. Nevertheless, challenges showed me what it is like to work in a real job. I overcame that challenges by thinking of different ways to do what I needed to do. In the end, I learned how to stack magazines and books in. I learned how to test the mechanics of a golf tool and how to sort and file purchase orders. I learned how to enter data in a spreadsheet. But what I really learned is what you do in a job. There are many different kinds of jobs, and you do different things in different jobs. But every job shares some of the same skills. You always need to arrive
at your scheduled time. You need to look nice and dress appropriately. You need to problem solve. Does not work correctly. You may need to use many pieces of technology to do your you may need to use different technologies to complete different jobs. You need to keep calm when things do not work out right, or when faced with a problem. You need to be polite and friendly, kind and caring. I found the internship experience worthwhile because I had fun. Especially at the library placement. I would like to learn more about working at a library and would like to work at the Westman Public Library in the future. However, I would really like to work my next job at McDonald's. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Ronan. That was great. We have another intern with us, and that is Jimmy James Dickman. He's a fellow board member on IAB. So, Jimmy.
Good afternoon. Thank you all for coming here. My name is Jimmy Dickman. I live in Park Ridge, Illinois. Presently, I am a junior at Loras College. I am a history major, and I am also on the mock trial team. I really love the NFB. This is my second state convention. I've been to our last two national conventions. I participated in our last Washington seminar, and I am also a board member of the Illinois Association of Blind Students. This past summer, I had an internship at the Chicago Lighthouse for the Blind. I taught adaptive technology to senior citizens and how to use adaptive technology on computers. A lot of my clients had little to no experience working with computers. Some of my clients were real funny characters. Sometimes they got frustrated. They would swear a little bit. But we kept that to a minimum. Also at the Lighthouse, I organized social and educational activities for senior citizens. It was a pleasure working with senior citizens. It was a great experience for all of us. And I taught my students, learned technology that enabled them to discover a whole new world. I spent my entire summer interning at the Chicago Lighthouse. My first internship was in the seniors program, and then for the remainder of the summer, I volunteered at the Low Vision Clinic. I really recommend the NFB to take advantage of all of the resources that the NFB offers. It is a great federation. I wish I would have joined a long time ago. And thank you all for coming here.
Okay, thank you to our interns. Quick announcement, we have extra lunches. We made too many, so if anyone is interested in a second lunch, up. Next, I'd like to introduce our NABS rep, the National Association of Blind Students. He is originally from Connecticut, but working on his PhD in economics at the University of Wisconsin. This is Justin Salisbury.
Sellout. What does that word mean to you? To me, sellout means how I got involved in the Federation. When I was a senior in high school, I was applying for money to help me go to college from wherever I could get it. I didn't care if it was a supermarket, a bank. I didn't care who it was. A bunch of blind. I applied for a national scholarship from this national blind organization. They flew me to Louisville, Kentucky. They had sighted people meet me when I got off the plane and walked me out to where I could get a cab, but they hooked me up with the cab too. And then I got to the hotel and there were sighted people there ready to take care of me the next step and the next step and the next step. And I thought, this group is really hospitable. And they're giving me money. I thought, this is pretty good. And then after that, they said, you know, we got the student division and we want you to get involved. And, you'll find that a lot of the student division leaders end up getting scholarships, as repeats. So if, you want to come back, you might want to get involved in the student division. I said, okay, I'll think about that. Money talks. They also taught me everything there was to know about the National Federation of the Blind, this extremist, militant, radical, ridiculous group that thought blind people should be doing things for themselves. My God. They taught me that the proper way to be independent wasn't all that NFB stuff. It was to force sighted people to take care of me. Then I'd really be independent. I'd be in charge. And I kind of went with that, but I just remembered, I think I applied for some other NFB scholarships too, and then I get this phone call a couple months later, and it turns out I'm winning a state scholarship in Connecticut from the NFB, but I'm thinking, oh God, these militant extremist people, I'm just going to put on my mental hard hat, I'm going to show up, take the money, maybe kiss some butt and hopefully get some money next year, do some politicking, and that'd be it. So I went, I sit, I listen. I'm thinking, these people are all pretty reasonable. Nothing's really crazy yet, and I'm just waiting for it and waiting for it. We get to the banquet, and there's a man from South Carolina that gets up on the microphone. And he starts telling this story about how when he was a little kid, he wanted to be a firefighter. But everyone told him, no, you can't do it, you're blind. And I said, oh my God, that little kid was me, except I wanted to be in the military. And I hear the same thing. Then he brought us up and he explained why there was no reason why a blind person couldn't be a firefighter. And he kept going and going and lifting us and lifting us. And soon enough, I was on my feet. I had my boxing gloves on. I was ready to take somebody down. But I didn't know who. But I knew I wanted to be a part of this group and I knew I wanted to go somewhere. I understood exactly where that militant idea came from. And I said, this is exactly me. So I figured, well, it wouldn't hurt. I'll keep applying for money and keep coming back. And I did. So I kept getting some other groups' money and things like that, and then I came to North Carolina State Convention. Got a scholarship there, too. Goody, goody. I show up, and I'm told by the scholarship chair, you know, we have a student division, and we'd like you to get involved. You might win again if you do. I said, wow, I've seen this game before. I think I'll play it the same way. So, at that meeting, I became the second vice president of the North Carolina Association of Blind Students, a group that I'd only just met a couple minutes before. And it was from that position that then Gary Ray, president of North Carolina, had an excuse to mentor me, and then I had to learn all this philosophy that this group had and regurgitate it, because that was what I was supposed to do as second vice president. And I talked myself into it. That was probably the best thing that ever happened to me. That was the big catalyst. And then from there, you know, you just keep showing up. You keep doing the job. You learn more. You meet new people. It's all fun. And life keeps going. Soon enough, you find yourself in a higher spot. But really, it's all about advancing the goals of the Federation. I want to share with you all a prophecy that's told in my tribe. I'm Native American, by the way, and in a few of the other tribes with common ancestry. It's called the Seven Fires Prophecy. There were seven prophets that came, and they each told a story of a different time, and each of those times is considered a fire. In the first fire, the people are following the sacred shell of the Medawiwin Lodge. They're strong. They're together. They're going to take a journey. They're going to start at a turtle-shaped island, and there will be another one at the end of the journey. At that one at the end of the journey, there will be a place where food grows on water. If you don't move, you will be destroyed, the prophet said. The second prophet told of the second fire. He said that the direction of the sacred shell would be lost, and the people would be camped along a lake. The Midewiwin, which is basically the idea of the spirit, the philosophy, what keeps you going, what keeps you ticking. It would be diminished, but a boy would be born, and he would be able to point the way back to the direction of the sacred shell, and they'd resume the journey. In the third fire, they'd find that path again, and they'd continue. Now comes the fourth fire. The fourth fire was actually told by two prophets, but they come together as one. The first one told, they both told, of the coming of the light-skinned race. The first prophet said, if the light-skinned race comes bearing the face of brotherhood, then the two people will come together as one and form a mightier nation than has ever existed. They will be strong together. They will bring new knowledge, new articles, and join with the people here. Everybody will be better off. But they might come bearing the face of death. And if they do that, there will be much suffering brought about the people. But beware, because if the light-skinned race comes in suffering, they might fool you. They might be greedy for the riches of the land. Be very careful, because the face of death looks very much like the face of brotherhood. Now on to the fifth fire. There's a great suffering, a great struggle that comes over the people. There's a promise that comes into the people of great joy and salvation. But this will turn out to be a false promise. Those who accept that promise will cause the destruction of much of the traditional ways and traditional values and bring struggle to our people. In the sixth fire, we will know that this promise was a false promise. The young will turn against the elders. The young will be taken away from the elders and away from the people. Now, to take a break from the legend, at the time that this legend was first told, there was much doubt the prophecy was told, the people were happy, they were comfortable, they had the medicines, they had everything they needed. There was no reason to worry, so many of them stayed. And those are the ones who would suffer most, because those are the ones that would encounter the pale skin race first. In that fifth fire, there was a military attack with bioterrorism and many things that we talk about today. We know the history. And that was all based on stripping the native people of their freedom and their independence. The false promise is commonly interpreted to be that of materialism that embodied the light-skinned race. Those who abandoned the traditional ways went on to cause that harm to our people. In the sixth fire, that's the boarding school era, where the native people were taken away from their parents, put in boarding schools, not allowed to speak the language, not allowed to practice the religion. They were civilized, as our government called it. They had to fit in. They couldn't be different. That was supposed to make them better off. Native people started dying at much younger ages. They'd lost their will to live. A group of visionaries got together. They collected the priests that still knew the ancient ways, the Medawebin Lodge. They recorded everything on some scrolls, buried it in a log over the edge of a cliff. And eventually one day it'll be found again, when a boy will dream of that location and lead the people back to it. But in the seventh fire, there's a younger prophet telling this seventh fire with a strange light in his eyes. He said there's a new people will come. And the new people will approach the elders. They'll have a very difficult task because the elders will have been sleeping. Nobody will have expected anything of them. They won't remember all of the old ways. Some of them won't be asked. Some of them won't be approached. But if the new people remain strong, they can get where they want to be. They can come back to the traditions. The sacred fire will be rekindled. The light-skinned race will face a choice of two roads. They could choose the road that will lead to an eighth and final fire, an eternal fire of peace and brotherhood for everyone, or they can choose a path that will lead to the destruction that they brought with them in the fourth fire and fifth fire to come back on them and cause suffering for all of us. Now, why have I brought up this? Make no mistake, it is not a message that disability and ethnicity are the same thing. I know better than to try to say that. But we have our own face of brotherhood. And we have our own face of death. When we are going through our lives and people treat us in different ways, sometimes the non-disabled, the sighted, the general public will treat us in ways that can strip us of our independence, whether they're trying to do it or not. And that for us is a face of death. The face of brotherhood can treat us with equality and allow us to keep our own independence. We talk in the legend, they're in this room because we never had a struggle. That's why we come out. We face that false promise. There are so many people here, myself included, who have been told it's best to try to blend in, look like sighted people. If you can possibly walk without a cane and only trip 3 times a day, do it. Because you have the promise of looking like a sighted person and fitting in. You will be normal. That will bring you more prosperity and hope. We here know that that is a false promise. And those who take it on bring about destructive qualities to us. Those who walk around without cane perceptions. There are a lot of blind people who, from lack of expectation, misunderstandings, etc., don't get the opportunity to actualize our purpose. And in that sense, we can lose our purpose for living as well. We can begin dying at younger ages for those reasons. And this isn't hypothetical. This has happened. The boarding school era. A lot of us are taught in the same ways. You need to fit in. You need to fit in. But really, are we better off using blindness techniques? I believe so. Visionaries. The visionaries who buried the legends. We had visionaries who gathered in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania in 1940, who started our movement. Are we the new people today, or are we still visionaries? I say we're both. Does it really matter either way, as long as we get the job done? Our task is not easy, but we remain strong, and we can get where we want to be. One of my favorite movies is the movie 300. How many here have seen it? So, in that movie, toward the end of it, we talk about remembering why those 300 Spartans fought. And we need to remember why the blind people who have come before us, Federationists or not, have fought the struggles that they have fought. Living in the subsidized housing because that's all they could get. Dying in the sheltered workshops. Living in the blind guilds where the blind people all just took care of each other and basically made their own little societies centuries ago. It is now our turn. These people have paid dues for us on our behalf. We need to continue to carry the torch, the progress. If we want to drink the milk, we have to feed the cows ourselves. That's why we all come out. That's why we do the work of the Federation. So what is the source of independence? We come here, we talk about independence. That's our theme. I'm reading off a Braille display. That maybe that's a form of independence, using what works for me. But sometimes we can get caught up in this trap of thinking that independence is something that other people hold and that we have to wrest it from them. But really, we all own our own independence. And where that's manifested is the degree to which we understand it. Independence is ours. We don't have to claim it. We just have to know that we have it. And we won't let anybody take it from us. We are the National Federation of the Blind. We walk alone, but we march together. I'm so proud to have everyone here with me. And please, continue to march with me as we claim our independence together. Nobody will let it stop us. Nobody will stop us. I am forever Justin Salisbury.
Thank you, Justin. I'd just like to extend a huge thank you on behalf of IABS for being with us at our convention. And we're going to kind of shift gears, and we're going to have what we're calling the College Experience Panel. And I'm going to have a few other people come up here. And we're going to have sort of an informal discussion about our college experience as blind students at all different levels of college. And our moderator, Katie Linham, has some questions to get us started, but we encourage audience participation at any time. Jump in with your questions or anything. I guess everyone's up here. Yeah, we're gonna, announcement. Thank you. Thank you. We'll go ahead and get started then.
Hello. Okay. This one works. Okay. This is a college experience panel. My name's Katie. I'm going to have the board just introduce themselves before we get started.
I'm Justin Salisbury. I did my undergraduate work as a bachelor's in mathematics at East Carolina University. I am now in the PhD program in agricultural and applied economics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
Hi, you probably already know this, but I am the graduated from Northwestern University with a degree in social policy.
I'm a sophomore at Loyola University Chicago. I'm studying English and International Studies. And I'm hoping to go to law.
Hey, everybody. I'm Chris Jackrad. I went to the John Marshall. I did my undergrad at the U of I and first vice president of IABS.
All righty. So the first question is, what is the process of getting your class material in college compared to, like, high school?
This is Justin. I'll take this first. I did a broad range of everything. I mean, everybody has to take your basic general education requirement classes where you're converting a lot of just simple text. And then there's also, of course, because I was a math major, so I had to learn the art of making that accessible as well. The key for me in that was being incredibly proactive about talking to the university, being very firm with them about something being really what you need. And this is a game that I'm still playing here in graduate school, where you can be plenty proactive, but you really do have to get them to understand the necessity of it. For example, here now in graduate school, getting my books in Braille. For some reason, they thought that if they didn't do that, that I'd still be okay. I'd figure something out on my own. And then they realized from my performance in my first semester that, yeah, I actually did need the Braille that I requested. So be proactive and make sure that they understand the necessity of what you're requesting.
Hi, this is Rose. Yeah, pretty much everything that Justin said, but for me specifically, I would always, I don't know, a little bit OCD, I guess you could say, but I would always turn in any books I needed to be scanned or for fashion. So as far as the process goes, professors and those letters, we had, we perfect way, person of the
at Loyola starts to make sure I can get the book, and it's a little advanced that I get the project. I knew that I needed to start a month in advance, at least because I needed to use books, check out books from the library. And with that, then I had to work with those formats, and it was kind of tricky in a chat. You really have to be proactive and a self-advocate and know that you have to work on things ahead of time. So that's a big thing, is preparation.
You know, it's really hard to follow up all these comments because they you know, to really boil it down, to be proactive is huge. You know, you can trust a department or someone, but in the end, it's you. You really have to get yourself across the finish line. As Justin and Rose both pointed out, too, articulate. You know, my message to the high school students here and or middle school students is, you know, you have to, and this is something that doesn't happen overnight, so keep that in mind. But you have to be able to understand what you need. And the only way that you will understand what you need is by trial and error, trying it out, learning the technology. I mean, that's a huge, huge thing, because if you show up and you don't know what to ask for, how are you going to get it? Okay? And then getting to, as far as what Brianna was just saying, you know, you're going to have to order books in advance. The good news is that it is a great way to reach out to your professors. when I was in law school, just because of my rocky time at UIC, I learned that if you reach out before the semester even begins, I mean, the second you get your schedule, you should be finding out who that professor is, emailing them, going to meet them personally if you can. You find out what book they typically use. Now, books get revised, so there will be new editions, but if you have an idea what's going on, and maybe they use the same book every year, maybe there's not a new edition not coming out, but you have to ask these questions. You get the book ordered, you get it in a format that's accessible, and or, you know, you have it scanned. But make no mistake, you are your own, you know, and that's, boy, that is so important. I can't stress that enough.
As mentioned, do you, and how do you understand that you be accommodated?
Oh, did you want to start with that? Okay. You know, in the beginning, if you have a professor or someone who seems dismissive, you know, I don't think I probably, it's not a stretch probably for most people definitely sitting up at this table, you get profs that are aloof. You know, they got a million things going on. Like a sick kid, I mean, it could be a million things. You're just down on the list. You have to be, the thing I always say is you have to be an iron fist in a velvet glove. So you have to be forceful but polite because, you know, it's hard for somebody in that position to deal with anybody. I mean, forget about vision. I mean, you know, anybody in some set, okay? Now, you're 100% for what you want and being humble and polite, it's smooth, more smoothly. And if, you know, you get profs or you get people who seem, again, dismissive, not cooperative, but that's kind of a nuclear option. You don't necessarily want to do that right away. You do want to try to work with the people that you have to work with because, you know, they'll be your professor for the semester. These people will, you might take another class with them. I mean, it's always a good idea to try positive relations first and again, and if all else, go a different route. I hope that's kind of the answer. I've tried.
Yeah. I think for professors, they won't want to help me is that they just don't understand. And that's because they've never had a student maybe with these kind of needs and accommodations. And I have to keep in mind that I'm representing blind people to
that's
them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I might be or probably am their first student that has these needs. So when they don't understand something, I can't automatically get upset with them. I just have to better explain what I need and maybe remind them a little bit more. And I think for the most part, a big issue is that my professors just forget, and I have to go talk to them and say, you know, you forgot this, I need this. And as long as I'm polite off, you know, I never want my professors to feel sorry for me or to think that I can't do the work because I can. I just need a little different approach sometimes. So I think when working with professors, I agree politeness is very important, but you also have to be firm and you have to know how to tell them what you need.
Yeah, I think you two pretty much summed it up. You know, be polite and also don't wait till the third week of the quarter or the semester to talk to your professors, you know. If you need a midterm to be sent to the Services for Students with Disabilities, or if you need a midterm enlarged or in Braille to take in class, you know, let them know really early on. Because if you don't, then, you know, you might take them by surprise, and they'll be flustered, and they might be a little bit annoyed. You know, just the better that you can stay on the good side, you know, the more you can stay on the good side of a professor, the better luck you'll have. And yeah, I personally don't think I've ever had any problems with the professors, but, you know, if you do, you have the support of everyone in IABS. You have the support of your mentors who have gone through the college process. So just keep that in mind, too.
I think the one-word answer is talk. Talk to your professors. That's pretty much what we've all said. I never had an issue getting FaceTime with a professor, even in the 250-person lectures, to be able to sit down in the office, say what it is that I need, ask with a smile, be friendly. And there's a way to also be firm and just say, look, if this doesn't happen, I'm not going to succeed. and say, but I really want to succeed. I'm in your class because I want to be here. Nobody made me be here. I think another key is to try to make sure that only the right information and only the right voices are coming into your professor's ears. I have had the experience before where I've explained my needs to a professor, my advisor actually, and then heard that in a separate meeting, a backdoor meeting that I wasn't told about until the time I learned of the destruction it caused, that someone at the university who claimed to be an advocate went and met with the professor one-on-one and explained that I didn't really need Braille, that I could make do in other ways, and that as long as they were giving me PDFs that weren't even text-based, that would be okay, and that would be something I could do to get through my math. And so as long as they gave me those basic picture PDFs, the ball was in my court, and it was up to me. And so when those interactions happened, and I wasn't there to stomp on them, that was a problem. So in addition to communicating your needs yourself, be sure that nobody else is communicating anything counterproductive to your needs.
All right. Next question. What was your greatest challenge starting college, and what advice would you give to blind students preparing to go to college? Why don't we start in the middle with Bree?
Greatest challenge going to college was probably just moving away from home, which isn't exclusive to blind students. It's pretty universal. I grew up in Champaign, and now I go to school in Chicago. So it was a huge adjustment for me. And one thing you should know before you go to school, how to take care of yourself. And that means being organized. It's not just about class. It's about keeping your room clean. It's about knowing how to wash your clothes, knowing how to get around. And this, I think we'll talk more about mobility, but a huge thing for me was just I had to take that leap that I was going to be independent. And I'm not a little kid anymore. I'm 18. I'm an adult. And I had to step up and start being responsible for myself. So I guess my advice would be, you know, when you're getting older in high school, you need to start learning how to advocate for yourself. If you need to talk to a teacher in high school, don't have your mom call that teacher. Like, you go in and talk to that teacher. If you need to get somewhere, or maybe you're just shopping with your parents, you know, have your parents give you like the grocery list and you go get those groceries, because those are kinds of things you have to do in college. So I would say start in high school and feel comfortable in your advocacy skills as well as your just basic living skills.
Okay, I guess I'll go next. So two challenges that came to mind when I was in college. The first one was I grew up in the suburbs. In the suburbs, there's not very much public transportation, but I knew that I wanted to be able to get to my home in Schaumburg and then to my school in Evanston independently. I didn't want to have to rely on my parents or whoever else to drive all the way from Schaumburg to come to Evanston to pick me up, to drive all the way back to Schaumburg and do that all again. You know, it didn't make sense to me. So what we ended up doing was, before I even stepped foot onto the Northwestern campus, a like public transportation like trial run. So we took like the Metro train to Chicago, and then we got on the L and we transferred to the L's and did all that, you know, and got to Evanston that way. And then we came home a different route. We took the bus route from Evanston to Schaumburg, and you know, just doing things ahead of time so that when you're doing it for the first time, it's not scary, because you know, you're with someone you know, and you're figuring out together, and there's, like, not, it's not a time crunch, you know, it's not as stressful. The other biggest challenge for me going into college was definitely the social aspect of it. You know, going into the cafeteria and trying to find your friends to sit with them, that was a really, really, really big challenge. You know, eventually, you as you make more friends, you ask them to meet you at the cafeteria, and, you know, they don't swipe in until you swipe in type of thing. That just sort of what ended up working for me. You know, now that I've been around the NFB for a while, I know there probably would have been a much easier solution to that, which may have been, you know, have a cane, you know, let people know that, look, I can't see you. Maybe if you could say hi to me, that would be a little bit easier. You know, who knows what I would do if I could do it all again. But, yeah. Justin, what do you think?
My greatest challenge with setting off for college was really the fact that I hadn't gone to training first. And I know that's kind of a sideways way of defining the problem, but the answer to it would have been knowing about NFB training centers and actually attending a National Federation of the Blind training center before going off to college. I was confined to living in the dorms and eating in the dining halls because that was all I could handle. Now that I have been to training and I'm living in my own apartment in graduate school, life is much more. And, of course, there is the whole concept that if I don't do the dishes, they don't get done. But I get to control that. And it's all up to me. I feel more like a grown-up. I'm more integrated into mainstream graduate school society. I would say that another key function of going to training would also be that level of comfort that you get with yourself because of it, that confidence. What Rose was explaining about how, you know, you need to say hi to me, I won't say hi to you because I won't recognize you. I've been that student at a party where I'm worshiping the gods of fermentation and meeting women and wanting to encounter them at some other point in my life. And having to try to explain to them that I really was blind even though I didn't have a cane. It was a legitimate thing. And that I did want them to come find me again. And of course, in their minds, it was always, yeah, he's had a little too much to drink, and he's just, you know, talking out the wrong end. So I think the fundamental thing for me was that I didn't go to training before I went to college. I didn't get skills and confidence that I needed to succeed in college before I went.
I want to second something Justin just said because I've had pretty much the same experience. You know, walking around without cane and interacting socially with people really in any context and then saying, you know, come and find me, yada, 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 they don't believe you. And why would they? I mean, what really evidence are you giving them? You know, being confident and having mobility training is very, very important because it does give you confidence and it lends some credibility because, you know, people don't know you. I mean, you have to remember the professors, they don't know you. These people that you're going to meet in college, they don't know you. Now, by the way, they want to know you and you're going to want to know them, but you can't expect anyone to just read minds. You can't expect it because they don't know you, you know. Okay, so my big thing, the big thing that I want to preach just for one second, and obviously I talk a lot, so, you know, if anything, take away today this, from me at least. Master the technology. Oh my God, that's so important, master the technology. You know, I don't know whether it's going to be, you know, Braille displays, whether it's going to be JAWS, Window Eyes, for some of you, Zoom Text, Magic, whatever. Victory readers, I mean, you are going to have to know the technology because this world is the evolution of how they do, you know, classroom systems, okay, so Blackboard and that type of thing. Interfaces are constantly changing, you know, and it's good. I mean, you know, you look at the iPhone and everything, and I mean, that's obviously very good. You have, what's it called, the speak function? It's just called talk, or the talk function. Yeah, so you know, you do have products out there that are out of the box ready, but, you know, in a lot of situations you don't. So you have software. I personally went to Illinois State for the visually impaired. I learned JAWS and Window Eyes there. I choose Window Eyes, but that's what I use, you know. That's how I surf the internet. That's how I check my email. I have yet to get an iPhone. That's more of a financial issue. But when I do, you better believe I'm going to be zooming around that thing like I see a lot of you doing at this convention. So anyway, master the technology because you will need it in some form or another. You'll need it, and I guarantee you're going to need it. So master it and get it down because that's going to be key to getting good grades.
Okay, so I think everyone up here has mentioned that getting around the cafeteria or campus or parties in general was a problem in college. So what mobility training or tactics would you recommend for managing not only the cafeteria, but college campuses and finding your classroom just in general? With Rose, start.
I mean, as I said before, like as far as mobility stuff goes, just do things ahead of time. You know, if you have an 8 a.m. class on Monday in room 217 in Kemper Hall, well, go to 217 Kemper Hall Sunday afternoon or Saturday afternoon or Friday, just so you have a sense of where it is. And not because you have to, but because, you know, you want to be on time to class. And at least for me, I don't want to be stressed out looking for a room. And that goes for not just finding your classes, but, you know, also, you know, as I said earlier, making your way from your home to your college or your dorm.
Bree.
Yeah. Okay. Before I started school, I actually did some orientation mobility training on my campus with my instructor, and that helped me a lot because I felt more comfortable just getting around campus generally. But then again, it's finding your classes within the buildings, and every building is different, and some buildings on campuses are very confusing to anyone. And there's a particular building on my college campus that's infamous for being extremely confusing, and I had a class in there, and I went beforehand to find that class, and it took me a while, but I found the class. And on the first day of class, I was there on time, and there were at least 10 other students who walked in late and were like, oh my god, I could not find this classroom, what is this building? So it's not just me, it's everyone. And I agree with Rose. Just go find your class before you have the class. It's not that big of a deal. No one's going to give you a weird look. It's fine.
Sorry, just one more thing. It's not like high school where it like closes, you know, at a certain time. I mean, yeah, some buildings do close down and whatnot, but it's very common in college for people to go into the academic buildings at different times of day, and it's not weird to be walking around. But in high school, that would be kind of strange if you were walking the halls at, like, you know, 7 p.m. at night or something.
There's also no detention in college, which I always really liked. That was great. Justin, do you want to jump in? You want me to go?
Certainly. I'm sorry to hear that you experienced detention a lot prior to college.
I never said that.
That's what I was reading out of it. Maybe I'm just a little too in tune over here. I don't know. But I can draw this back to training. You know, when it comes down to the mobility, honestly, the only cane travel techniques that I'd use are really just like any other part of life. Once you get those down, you'll reach a point where as you graduate from the training centers, you will be told you will not need any more O&M instruction anymore for the rest of your life. You're good now. You know this stuff. Don't feel ashamed to ask for it if you really think you need it, but honestly, you have these skills now. So that would have fixed that for me. But something I want to highlight is kind of also tying back to the dining halls and things, where a lot of times the issue of a situation like a dining hall versus finding a class in an academic building is almost more of a social thing. To me, the most important thing about the dining hall was the food I was eating, and the people I was eating with. If I go in there and do all the O&M skills and everything, or the cane travel skills, and I go get my food, I go find a seat, but I'm doing it all by myself, that's not nearly as much fun as eating with other people. And so I would often go through the lines with my friends that I was there to eat with, not because I needed it for independence, but because choosing to go and do it by myself would have been limiting my real goals, my real priorities. And thus, that wouldn't really be independence. That would be demonstrating that I had some security issue and had to go and walk through the lines on my own. So I'd still always go through using my cane, doing all of the physical manipulation by myself, but I would always be tight with my friends because, for me, the dining hall was a social experience. Keep that in mind when you're looking at these opportunities. You know, there's being independent, and then there's also trying to make a demonstration of something that, in fact, isn't being independent. It's simply preventing you from your real goals.
Yeah, and I guess I could just echo kind of... Oh. It's like, what do you say? You know, again, I think we're all just echoing each other because, you know, we've been through it and we're still going through it. Looking at the classroom situation, you know, just to add to what Rose said, not only go to your class before it starts, if the door's unlocked, go in and sit down. Find them where the rows are. I mean, connect with the space. You don't want to be late for class, and you don't want to get to class on time. I mean, I think getting to there 5-10 minutes early, if you can, it's perfect. You get a seat. You can sit in a seat where you want to sit. You know, maybe you'll have a time to make small talk with your neighbors who are sitting around you, and, you know, thus the social process begins. As far as the cafeteria goes, yeah, I mean, you know, if you have friends, go hang out, have a good time. It's not... College isn't as big bad, it's not a big bad scary thing, and I think that once you actually dive in, it becomes more apparent. But I remember myself, I understand that on the outside it definitely seems that way. That's it. I don't want to just ramble. So.
All right, well, that is it. Thank you, everyone, for your help and insight on college for everyone.
Okay, I just have one more thing that is not on the agenda. Since this is the IABS lunch, we have an award. It's the Illinois Association of Blind Students Service Award. We can choose to award this to someone we feel has served our organization in the highest form. And we, as a board, voted to give this award to our wonderful president, Miss Rose Sloan, who has been our president for a year now. And under her presidency, IABS have seen such an expansion, and it's grown so much, and we love her so dearly. We're all proud to present the IABS Service Award to Rose Sloan.
So much. This means a lot to me. I love you too. That's all I can say. Thanks.
And with that, we conclude our lunch. So I hope everyone enjoyed it. Thank you all so much.
Gotta get up and take on that world. You're an idol, it's no cliche, it's the truth.
Really well done, you guys. Thank you so much.